Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
Mountaintop removal, once the mountain is gone, there's really no economic use for the land in southern West Virginia.
Roger Benham joins us once again. He is a street medic who has traveled to places like Haiti, Palestine, Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, and other places. Roger Benham is just back from West Virginia, where he and two other Connecticut medics got a firsthand look at the damage done to the environment by the coal industry and companies like Massey Energy. Facing lawsuits and criticism over mine safety, Massey has undergone a name change. It's now Alpha Resources. A growing protest movement has been largely ignored as the company has devastated mountain regions, damaging the state's economy, wrecking homes, and ruining health. Roger Benham fills us in on the fight to save Coal River Mountain, the subject of Robert Kennedy Jr.'s new film, The Last Mountain. This is the trailer.
Explosive power the size of a Hiroshima bomb once a week.
They just keep this process up until they literally reduce the mountain to rubble.
Coal River Mountain is our last great mountain. It hasn't been blasted to ashes.
Massey Coal, the single most destructive coal mining company in history.
That's your coal dust.
And that's what the inside of the kids' lungs are gonna look like.
Massey, hear us!
People have had enough. And they're standing up to the coal company.
The fight over Coal River Mountain is a fight about democracy.
Robert Kennedy Jr. is lending his voice.
How can Massey Coal have 60,000 violations and nobody in the state came and stopped them?
We want our kids in a safe new school.
National average for brain tumor is 1 in 100,000. And we had 6 that lived side by side. The only thing we have in common is the fact that we all have well water.
Mountaintop coal mining is literally threatening the water supplies of tens of millions of people.
We live in a very intelligent country that has the ability to create energy without blowing up mountains.
We're looking at a proposal now to construct a wind farm in Coal River Mountain.
That's our last mountain. That's the last one we have.
Corporations do not want democracy. They want profits.
They're bound and determined to knock the mountain down. We're bound and determined to stop it.
It's either them or Massey, and Massey's been winning for a long time.
Coal is mean, coal's cruel, and coal kills. The American people need to find their position. You're connected to coal, whether you realize it or not. Everybody's connected to this, and everybody's causing it, and everybody's allowing it.
Let them hear your voice in that building back there!
If the American people could see it, there'd be a revolution in this country.
Roger Benham, welcome once again to Talk Nation Radio.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be here.
Why don't you tell listeners what mountaintop removal mining really is?
Mountaintop removal coal mining, which is the specific type of extraction that we're talking about here, involves using explosives, mainly ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives, the same kind that were used by Timothy McVeigh in Oklahoma City, very powerful explosives to blow up successive levels of the tops of mountains in Appalachia, southern West Virginia, and eastern Kentucky, and parts of extreme southwestern Virginia. And what happens after the mountains are blown up is that exposes these very thin seams of high-grade coal, which are then scraped off, and the resulting debris that was once the mountaintop is shoved into adjoining valleys in what is called valley fills. So you end up where there was once a mountain, a pyramidal mountain covered with very diverse, mixed mesophytic deciduous forest, you end up with a flattened area that is, once they're done, they restore it, but they restore it by planting invasive grasses on it. So you end up with this kind of like, from a distance, they look like golf courses up above you. And they've also destroyed and filled in the adjacent streams. This kind of mining has been going on in Appalachia for at least 20 years. But it's a favored method of mining because it employs few workers than underground mines. And since it takes place at the headwaters, of the top of the mountain is the headwater, you don't have some of the problems associated with older forms of strip mining where you'd have water coming down from above into the mine site.
And so in this case, though, what you have are erosion problems, right? You know, air, land pollution, and really life as people have known it in these mountains has just come to a halt. Now, we heard the trailer just now from Robert Kennedy Jr.'s film. The film itself, the video, is very compelling.
Yes, Coal River Mountain is a long ridge that is actually a little bit further to the east than where I was this time. I was there in 2005, and the Coal River Valley has been a big site of resistance to this type of mining. They have been systematically moving upstream along the Coal River and doing more and more mountaintop removals adjacent to the Coal River Mountain itself. A lot of times in this area of the country, when you say mountain, it's actually a long ridge. So you might have several summits that are part of the same mountain divided by places of slightly lower elevation. And that valley, I believe it's to the east of Coal River Mountain, is where Coal River Mountain Watch got started. That was an organization started by Judy Bonds and others in that area, people like Bo Webb and Ed Wiley and other folks from the valley, some of whom were former coal miners and others coming from coal mining families. Organized and have been advocating for the government of West Virginia and for the federal government to step in and stop the increasing degradation caused to the ecosystem around the Coal River and also to their own properties. That's the other thing about mountaintop removal that they'll tell you. It's not like mining in some places out west or logging that takes place on federal lands. None of this mining takes place on federal lands. It's all privately owned by land companies that are owned by the coal companies. But the problem is they'll come in and they'll buy somebody's land and then they'll start operations on it. And anyone adjacent is forced into selling. And the longer they wait, the lower the price they're going to get because your property values plummet if your water is all poisoned and you're subject to your foundation cracking from explosions. Fly rock will fall down the slopes. That's the rock shrapnel that is produced by the explosions. And then there's direct harassment to get people that are really trying to hold out and hold on to their family's land to sell. So things like people's animals being killed, people being disturbed in the middle of the night. So that's what's been going on in the Coal River Valley and the other places throughout southern Appalachia. And Coal River Mountain Watch and other people had an alternative vision for Coal River Mountain itself because there's a lot of indications that Coal River Mountain would be a good place to put wind turbines and to work on introducing renewable energy into the southern Appalachian coal field, which would provide jobs, and they would provide sustainable jobs that would still be here in decades, whereas mountaintop removal will not. Mountaintop removal, once the mountain is gone, there's really no economic use for the land in southern West Virginia. A wind farm on that mountain would save the contour of the mountain and save most of the forest on it. But Massey Energy, which is the company in southern West Virginia that does most of the mountaintop removal, not all, but most, have always been opposed to that, and they have always opposed the introduction into the southern coal fields of any alternatives to coal mining, either to provide jobs or to provide an alternative vision of how to generate energy. They want to keep people in southern West Virginia entirely dependent upon one industry, and that is high-impact coal mining. Some underground mining, but really mountaintop removal. And I should add that Massey Energy no longer exists. The week before I went to West Virginia, so about 2 weeks ago, they were bought by a company known as Alpha Energy. And that was mainly, most people think that was an attempt by Massey to get out from under liability for a lot of the things they've been doing wrong. The main concern being something that happened in the Coal River Valley in, I think it was last year, where the Upper Big Branch mine, which was an underground mine, exploded, killing 29 underground miners. And Massey, in their report, said that was an act of God, that God sent a methane bubble up through the mine that no one could have foreseen. But the federal government and other state regulators said, no, this mine had repeated safety violations. So the idea that Massey no longer exists fits in with their method of operations. That's kind of how they deunionized the coal fields when they first came into existence. They would buy mines and then shut them down, and then shortly afterwards reopen them under a shell company so that the previously unionized mine, they could say, well, this is a completely new company, and then proceed not to hire anyone who they suspected might try to reorganize the formerly unionized mines back into the United Mine Workers of America. So what's going on in southern West Virginia is really challenging a monopoly capitalist system that does not want any alternatives to be brought in.
One of the troubling points, of course, is that residents of this area don't seem to have federal protection in any form. for their lives. I mean, if their air is poisoned, if their water is poisoned, if they're not safe, and if their property values are going to be plummeting, they seem to have no rights.
Basically, when you are there in the southern coal fields, the entire economy, as I said, is based upon coal, and there's really no democracy as people understand it in other parts of the country that aren't subject to this monopoly resource extraction. The reason that I was down there last week was to participate in a march on Blair Mountain. There was a rally at the end of the march, and Robert Kennedy Jr., who works for the National Resources Defense Council, talked about this and how shocking it is for people from away from the coal fields to realize that there really is no democratic system in West Virginia. If everything is dependent upon one industry, and that industry is dominated by one or two very repressive corporations, and they have successfully destroyed the unions, then people have no democratic recourse. You can protest and speak your mind under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution and the guarantees in the political system of West Virginia, but if the entire economy is dependent upon this monopoly corporation, then you can lose your job for doing that. Or if you don't work directly for the coal companies, then your husband or your brother or your cousin or your father can lose their job. Or if you run a campground, as happened to us on the march, and you say that you will rent campground space to people marching to try to preserve Blair Mountain, you can be threatened at the last minute that your family will never work in your hometown again. And that's what happened on this march, is everywhere that we had arranged to camp was canceled at the last minute because of the pressure that the coal companies can bring to bear. Then, as we marched, there would be towns we would come to where we got a lot of opposition from people who work in the coal industry, because they had been told by the companies that the object of our political work is to throw them out of their jobs. And since the coal companies have made it so that they are the only game in town, there was a lot of hostility amongst people. The United Mine Workers of America, this particular march that I went on, they were involved in talks to support it, but eventually only one local of the UMW of A, the local in Mingo County, ended up endorsing it. And that local is mainly made up of retired miners. There's about 1,200 members of that local in Mingo County, West Virginia, which is about the total number of unionized coal miners left in the entire state. And those are figures that I got from Joe Stanley, who was a UMW of A miner who was on the march, a retired miner. But as he says, the numbers are not completely reliable because the companies are not forthcoming with them. Other times we would have support from people on the march who, it took quite a lot of courage for them to speak up, because we went through some very small towns. And on one side of the road would be a house with Friends of Coal, Tree Huggers Suck, Go Home. And on the other side of the road directly would be someone giving us free soda and saying thank you. The lines are very drawn. It's always been the way in coal country. You know, there's that old song, Which Side Are You On?, about a strike in Harlan County, Kentucky, talking about unionization efforts in the mines. And it's still the same way there when you're talking about preserving the land. You really, if you're going to be making any kind of political statement, it's going to be quite obvious which side you are on. And if you're not doing what the coal operators want or saying what they want, they can make it very difficult for you, and they can force you to move. They don't really kill people anymore like they did back in 1921 when the Battle of Blair Mountain happened, but they can make it impossible for you to live in that area.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio, an interview with Roger Benham about mountaintop removal mining in one of America's coal-producing states. There's a long history in West Virginia of Americans losing rights as coal production dominates their lives. Aunt Molly Jackson was one of the most powerful voices to ever rise up against abusive coal mining practices, she once told Studs Terkel during an interview we found at the Pacifica Archives and Radio from the Vault, that she had forced a store owner to give her groceries for dying babies. And when the sheriff came after her, he had a change of heart.
I said, I'm no robber, but I said it was the last chance I have heard these little hungry children cry for something to eat till I'm desperate. I'm almost out of my mind. And I said, I will get out, as I said, and collect that money just as quick as I can and paid. I said, you know I'm as honest as the days is long. And the tears come in his eyes. And he said, well, Aunt Molly, he says, they sent me up here, he says, to arrest you. They coal operator. Well, Gooden sent me here to arrest you. He was a coal operator. But he says, if you've got the heart to do that much, he says, for other people's children, that's not one, got one drop of your blood in their bodies, he says, I will pay that bill myself, he says. And he says, if they fire me for not arresting you, he said, I will be damn glad of it.
In 1920, a mine war broke out in Mingo County in southern West Virginia along the Tug Fork, which is the river separating southern West Virginia from eastern Kentucky. And the strike dragged on for quite some time, and the United Mine Workers of America were trying to organize the unorganized mines. The coal operators threw everyone out of their housing. Remember, at the time, everything was company housing. People were paid in company script. Miners were not paid wages at that time. They were paid by the ton. I believe in 1920, they were paid 40 cents a ton. So if you had a bad day and there wasn't much coal available, or you got on an unfavorable shift, then your family went hungry. So people were organizing against this, and then there was a fair amount of violence that erupted along the Tug Fork. But the miners did have one place where democracy was actually asserted, and that was the town of Matuan, where both the police chief and the mayor had been elected by miners, and they stood up for the miners' rights. And the mayor's name was Testerman, and the police chief's name was Sid Hatfield. The company employed the security guards from the Baldwin Felt Corporation, these thugs that would throw people out of their houses. And Sid Hatfield, as police chief, said that they couldn't throw any more people out of their houses. And a gunfight erupted eventually on the street between the police chief, Sid Hatfield, and the Baldwin Felt thugs. And the mayor was killed, and so were some of the mine thugs. Sid Hatfield was brought up on charges of murder about a year and a half later. And as he went up the courthouse steps to his first arraignment in Welch, West Virginia, he was assassinated in broad daylight with his wife on his arm. And when word of this circulated through the unionized mines further north in West Virginia, the attitude was, well, if they can kill the mayor of a town and they can kill the police chief, then they can kill anyone. So the only way that we're going to ever unionize the southern coalfields is if we march in there with our own guns and forcibly unionize the mines. So word spread, and eventually the estimates are between 7,000 and 10,000 miners took up arms and marched from Marmette, West Virginia, just outside Charleston, with the objective of marching up Lenz Creek through Madison, West Virginia, and up over the shoulder of this place called Blair Mountain across Logan County to Mingo, where the strike was going on. The sheriff of Logan County, a man named Don Chafin, was squarely in the pockets of the coal company, and he said, I will never allow an armed mob to cross Logan County. So he proceeded to organize his own armed mob. He deputized anyone in Logan County who would be willing to come up and pick up a gun. And there is some evidence that some people were forced into joining this impromptu militia with the threat of losing their jobs or being run out of the county. West Virginia State Police were also involved in being part of this army. And they went up and they dug trenches along the top of Blair Mountain, which sits right astride the path between Charleston and Mingo. And the miners were dissuaded from continuing their march by their own union leadership, Frank Keeney and Bill Blizzard. Initially, they were in contact with West Virginia officials, and Governor Harding, Warren G. Harding, sent a letter saying that things would be looked into if everyone went home. And so people did start to go home, but then there was a minor skirmish in Sharples, West Virginia, where the state police decided to go down into the town and start arresting miners. And they killed some people there, and they shot into people's houses when they were sleeping at night. When word of that got back, the march spontaneously started again. So you had 10,000 miners armed with fowling pieces, squirrel pieces, and also with weapons that they procured from company stores, moving on Mingo. And they commandeered trains. They commandeered so many trains that the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad suspended its schedule in southern West Virginia, and the miners themselves ran the railroads. In the company stores, they found a lot of modern weapons, Springfield 30-06 rifles, 30 caliber Browning Colt machine guns, all which had been stored in the company stores to use against the miners. But they were not nearly as well armed as the militia that they were marching to face. When they got to Blair, they encountered these trenches, and for 5 days on a 10-mile long front, fairly heavy fighting ensued in this very steep, thickly wooded mountain ridge. There's no reliable estimates of how many people were killed. The low number is 16. The high number that I've heard is 300. But it was the biggest armed insurrection in the United States besides the Civil War. And aerial bombing was used by Sheriff Chafin. They hired, I believe it was 3 pilots to fly their biplanes over the miners' camp, and they dropped gas. It's not known whether it was tear gas or some kind of mustard gas, and they also dropped several homemade bombs. None of the aerial bombing hurt anyone that we know of. One of Chafin's militiamen was severely burned by one of the gas bombs when he was loading it in Logan. But this battle was ongoing until the U.S. Army came in, and when the miners heard that the U.S. Army was on its way, remember, this was 1921, this is West Virginia, these were not men who wanted to overthrow the U.S. government. They just wanted their rights as Americans. And many of them were veterans of World War I. They had no intention of fighting the U.S. Army. So when the Army showed up, they surrendered. They turned over their guns. Not all of their guns. In fact, very few guns got turned over. Most of them got hidden in the woods. And for 10 years, the coal operators had their way in southern West Virginia until the New Deal came along and workers gained collective bargaining rights. And that's when the United Mine Workers of America was able to unionize West Virginia finally. But although it was a defeat, it had a great symbolic victory. Frank Keeney and Bill Blizzard, who did eventually join the march after the Sharples massacre and played some leadership roles, were tried for treason, but they were acquitted. And it really resounded in southern West Virginia as a time when miners finally stood up as Americans and as human beings, and they stood up to the brutality and the murder of the coal companies. Remember, the coal companies at this time had been routinely machine gunning men, women, and children for several years in southern West Virginia. So many people talk about this as labor's Gettysburg. It's a very significant event in the U.S. history and the history of the state of West Virginia, but it's not one that's taught in schools. And Blair Mountain itself is now under threat of being blown up for mountaintop removal. So there is a drive on to get it dedicated as a national battlefield or some kind of national park rather than being blown up just like every other mountain in the area.
Who has the rights to Blair Mountain that you might know about?
The actual battlefield site is privately owned by, I believe it's by Alpha Coal Company. I believe it was owned by Massey up until 2 weeks ago. So it is definitely private property. They have bought it from people. But it's worth it to remember that Chancellorsville and Yorktown and Saratoga and Bunker Hill, these were all private property places where there were very significant battles in American history. Generally, we don't judge our national heritage on whether or not strictly it's private property. We take property by eminent domain all the time, but certainly no one lives on these mountains. It is there just for coal company purposes. There's no reason why the federal government couldn't fairly pay the coal companies to not blow it up. And then many people believe that you could still mine the coal out from underneath. You would just have underground mines rather than destroying the mountain completely for everyone. And that was one of the points of this march. Many people on this march are against coal, but many others were not. And like I said, a lot of miners were involved, and doing underground mining is not something that was opposed by the march, because with a unionized underground mine, it's still dangerous, but it's not as dangerous as a non-unionized mountaintop removal mine. So you could continue to mine the mineral rights without completely destroying the ecosystem and the historical interest of the site.
You know, interestingly, the White House announced this week an interest in cultivating more foreign investment in American business. It makes us wonder, I think, what the impact will be, given that we know the histories of colonial powers seeking resources in places like India, Africa, Asia.
It is interesting. We marched for 5 days and we retraced the routes of the miners in 1921 from Marmette to Blair Mountain, which is 50 miles. But on the way, there was a Russian reporter who was reporting on things, and I thought that was interesting. And I asked some people, what's that about? And some people said, oh, that Russian news system reports on all kinds of things. But then it turned out that there's actually Russian investment in some coal mines in West Virginia. Ironically enough, those are some of the last unionized mines, the ones that have Russian investment. And I was also told by John Gensler, who's from West Virginia and who is trying to start a sustainable energy company there, that an Italian company had come into West Virginia and wanted to put power-generating turbines on a pre-existing dam there. Because there are dams in West Virginia, but very few of them produce hydroelectric power. But Massey Energy at the time opposed that because, once again, they didn't want any alternatives to coal to be coming into the coal fields. So really, what you have in West Virginia is a colonial situation right here at home. And it's mainly companies that are owned within the United States who are perpetuating this colonial system where what they say goes, and they repeatedly want to block democracy. They have very paternalistic attitude towards their workers. You know, they put on a 4th of July picnic, they buy Christmas gifts. But when it comes to people's water being poisoned and people suffering adverse health effects and losing their property values, the companies just run roughshod over them and people have no recourse. It's interesting, according to federal law, we do have something called the Clean Water Act, which Joe Stanley and Robert Kennedy Jr., amongst others, have pointed out repeatedly that if we were to enforce that law, you could not do mountaintop removal coal mining, because mountaintop removal necessitates burying streams in toxic waste, basically, and that's completely against federal law. But because West Virginians from this area don't have a political voice, it's allowed to happen. It's impossible to think that we would allow, perhaps, the Shetaket River here in Connecticut, or one of the main tributaries of the Hudson, as Robert Kennedy Jr. pointed out, to be buried by a private company in toxic sediment. We would put those people in jail. But West Virginia has lost, I believe, upwards of 700 miles of watercourses to the waste of mountaintop removal. And no one has ever gone to jail for any of that. And I think that there may not even have been many fines leveled, if any at all. So you really have a colonial situation in the United States still in West Virginia, just like you did in 1921. Although there's not nearly as many people there, because the other result of this type of coal mining is the systematic depopulation of the coal fields. In 1921, you had a much higher population density because the technology was such that there were more jobs, but also the land itself could support more people. People are being systematically driven out of southern West Virginia and really driven into cities outside of the coal field. Of course, many young people go into the military. It's a part of the economic draft to systematically erase any jobs except in coal or the military. The disproportionate number of young people from the coal regions end up in the military and in combat situations. It's the same thing that you find anywhere that there's an unchecked extractive industry. It's very bad for democracy, it's bad for the ecology, it's bad for people's health, and it's importantly, it's bad for the economy, because West Virginia is not one of the richest states in the Union. It's one of the poorest, even though it's the second largest producer of coal, and it's been producing coal for over 100 years. Just like in Louisiana with oil, the places that produce these resources that have a huge impact on the environment tend to be less democratic, more corrupt, and people have shorter lifespans and more chronic health problems. And their economic value declines over time.
Don't go under the mountains with a cedar hanging over your head. Please don't go under the mountains with a cedar hanging over your head. And work for just cloud and cardboard, and your children crying for bread. This mining town I live in is a sad and lonely place.
You can learn more about this issue at mountainjustice.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. The program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. Our website is talknationradio.org, where you can find a complete list of stations airing our show. And we'd like to thank everyone for having patience with us after our computer systems were damaged by storms, and for sending nice letters of support. Thanks especially to WUOW SUNY, WHUS Storrs, WDRT Viroqua, Wisconsin, KRFP Moscow, Idaho, KZGM Public Reality Radio, WPRR, and many others.